Hey everyone, you're listening to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but our love for puttering most definitely isn't. This is episode 120. I am one of your hosts, Anne, and with me, as always, is my friend, turned lover, co-host Marcus.
Hi.
Hi. You like puttering?
Yes, I do, quite a bit.
You like some puttering? I like some puttering. I think, we talked a lot about puttering in the last episode. We're doing all this cleaning. But when I was thinking about what to say today, I was like, oh, a lot of the life news segment is us talking about puttering that we've been doing.
Sure.
Love to putter. Well, you may have noticed that we actually missed the week. So we're a week behind schedule, but that's because we were up in the Portland area visiting with some of my family. So we took a long weekend, went up that way, and did some fun stuff. Of course, geocaching was on the docket. This is technically our first time geocaching outside of our home base, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what did we get up to?
Well, we went to a couple of places. There was some sort of historic fort or something. We found some tour there, a ghost tour.
Well, that was part. So the ghost tour was like an adventure.
Log,
right? Yeah,
yes.
So in the geocaching world, mm-hmm. not the real world.
Yes.
So we learned about some old ghosts, and got caches.
Mm-hmm. And then we went to a park, and then we also, that was where we actually found caches.
Yes.
Like real ones.
Around the fort, we tried to find at least one cache, and we could not find it. I got very disheartened.
Yeah. I think the first two of the day we couldn't find.
They were hard.
And we're like, wow. We suck.
Yeah.
but at the park, it was much better.
Mm-hmm.
We found multiple.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like very large, a couple very large caches as well. Like that one was a really big container with various little trinkets that people left behind.
Yeah, that was our first time seeing a lot of trinkets. We did mm-hmm. find one other thing, remember in the parking lot,
mm-hmm.
where there were some... Seems like people's garbage, but it was like little snacks left behind, but we didn't mm-hmm. actually find the cache there in that instance. But that one that you're talking about was the first time we found a cache that was full of like goodies.
Mm-hmm. It was cute.
It was very cute.
So yeah, we got to actually see some cool caches, and I thought that was a lot of fun. You found some, I found some. We found one that was like a plastic squirrel. you found like this secret little hidden wood thing.
Yeah, that was our first mini, right? So mm-hmm. I think one of the ones we couldn't find on the first trip to find some, where we got a bit disheartened, it said it was a mini cache, and it was a type of cache, and now I can't remember the name
bison
of it again. Bison tube, yeah, that's right. We had to look up what a bison tube is to get an idea of what we were looking for, and it is pretty small, like shaped like a pill, but maybe like an inch or two max long, a little tube that you can like mm-hmm. twist open. So we had an idea, but we're like, how do people hide these, right? And yeah, I did find one in a block of wood. That was mm-hmm. fun. So I was very happy that we got to see, like, what it looks like, you know, in person.
Yeah, I liked it. And now I want to do more here. Now that the weather is better. Actually, it's too hot now. But I would like to do some more.
Yeah, so unlike the rest of the country, it's been... nice weather over here. And it was nice weather in Portland mm-hmm. when we went. So that was good. Yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun to have like a goal. Like you're going somewhere. You're like, oh, why don't we check out this spot? So we did that a lot on the trip and it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we did on the trip, which I've never done before, was go to like a pinball. It's not quite just a bar. What would you say? A bar and eating establishment. Arcade club. I don't know. They had smash burgers.
Mm-hmm.
They had all kinds of food. I mean, I guess bars have food too. Pub.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, they had a lot of good stuff. We went with my mom because she likes pinball. And they had to have had like 25 machines in the back. And you paid $12 for a day pass. All you could play. You could come and go as you wished. They gave you a little wristband, which was cute. and we just got to do free play on all the machines, and there was like no one there because we went first thing
yeah.
in the morning. That was very fun.
Well, there were a couple people in the restaurant, but only near the end did anyone even come into the pinball part.
Yeah. So we all played lots of different machines. Did you have a favorite machine or anything notable from that?
I just thought it was fun to get to sample all the different games.
Yeah.
I like that. I wish there was more old stuff. And when I say old, I mean like, you know, where they're not fancy, where they don't, where they're old, like 50s and stuff
with,
really like old. That. The oldest here was probably like 90s something.
Yeah. They had a Mario one that I've never even seen before, which was pretty cool, and that was older. But yeah, they didn't have really old. And in fact, a lot of them were quite new with big screens and everything.
And like a QR code reader thing as well.
Yeah, they were like, sign up for this app or something.
But I liked getting to try them out.
Yeah, I don't really play a lot of pinball, so it was fun to just sample all the different machines. And you got to play versus. You could, like, you know, push start a couple times, and you could all play the same machine. So that was fun, too.
I can't remember the name of the one that was my favorite, but it's the one with the aliens.
Oh.
Where you saw, like, they would wiggle and
like,
shake.
Yeah, it was, like, Attack from Mars or something.
Yeah,
generic. But, yeah, all the little plastic aliens in the machine would jiggle around. It was so funny. Yeah, there was a Dune machine, and my mom's a fan of Dune, but I thought that one's pretty fun to play, and it had scenes from the movie in it, so very fancy. Okay, well, that's all for our Portland trip. When we were at home, you were busy puttering, as always. First of all, I got to benefit big time from this project. You kindly built me a cute little computer, my first ever desktop PC, actually. And we got an OLED monitor to go with it, which is really cool because anyone that's been a fan of JigPixel for a while knows that I love OLED. But tracing back to probably the Vita was my first real OLED thing, and I just love OLED. But having the OLED monitor with the new computer looks really nice. But this computer that you built for me is called a Framework, and you said that you wanted to do this for a while, like this specific company's PCs?
Yeah. I mean, for no real reason other than I think they're a fun company. They also do build-it-yourself or whatever laptops. So, and I think that's what they did first before they even did the desktop version. And I was interested in that. I'm like, it would be cool, you know, to have a laptop that you can upgrade and some, you know, so and so on. But you, I think, wanted a desktop or something more powerful. And when you try to get really powerful, like in regards to graphic cards and stuff for a laptop, it gets very expensive very quickly. So for a desktop, you can get a lot more power for cheaper. So that's, I think, all those things were going around and you just...
Yeah, and we were talking about, I think you mentioned that RAM's going way up in price and worrying about, you know, just tariffs and everything. Everything's always going up, and since I have been thinking about wanting a stronger computer for a little while now, you kind of were like, well, why don't we just do it before prices go up even further? And I think after you bought it, they had a price hike, right?
Yes. Framework announced like multiple price increases because there was a lot of, you know, everything that's going on. But I do appreciate that they're forward with these things and they explain why they're increasing pricing and, you know, what that means and all that stuff. So I appreciate that at least. And yes, I didn't need to go with them. I could have piecemealed all the parts separately, but I was lazy.
Okay.
And it's like, I've always been interested in this company anyway. So I'm like, let me just try it out.
So one of the enticing things for me about this is that Framework specifically does really small computers, right? Like a little box with little components. So there isn't anything specific to them about the smallness of it. You could have done that yourself too, but maybe it would have taken a while to figure out what works with what and all of that.
I mean, a little bit. I've never built a computer in that small of a form factor. I think it's like a micro ATX. So I was like, I could do it myself, figure everything out that I need to put in there, buy it, but I don't want to.
That's fine. No, and Framework is cute. They have lots of cute options for people that are into that kind of thing. So not only is it tiny, but it has a little customization on the front panel. You can pick like little colored panels and make a little design on the front yourself. And you can change it up because they just clip in and out. So you can change it if you want. Then you can customize things like whether you want to have a handle on it. So mine is a cute little handle. You can change the color of like the USB port on the front, pick which color you want. So there are fun little customization options that, yeah, maybe you could do, probably not the panel thing on your own, but it's just a nice little setup. But I can't speak to how it was to put together. But what did you think about that? Like the whole process, they had instructions, and you said it was easier in general than like a regular build yourself thing.
Yes, even though they call it like DIY, when you get the computer, a lot of it is still already, it's already put together. Mainly you need to add SSDs and then the fan, connect the fan to the motherboard, and not much else really. So it's very streamlined. Although it was hard to get the little plugs in, I'm like, my fingers are not small enough in this cramped little space to do this. But I eventually did. So yeah, it's not like building from scratch because from scratch you got to put everything on the motherboard versus here it's like a lot of it was already there. What took the longest was stupid Windows.
Yeah, the windows, and then you said that, folks like me, regular folk, wouldn't be used to installing all of the drivers and things you need to install. Like you even had to get a Wi-Fi driver, didn't you? So it's like, even though Framework sort of seems like they're trying to make building a PC more accessible, I don't know that they're quite there for just like, oh, making it so that anybody could do it,
Yeah, the driver thing, they didn't very clearly specify that in the instructions. So I think I saw them somewhere else that they said they had drivers. I'm like, okay. And then got them. So it was fine. But yeah, it was just, I didn't prepare. I should have like pre-downloaded Windows 11 on a flash drive and stuff. And, but since I didn't, it was like forever.
Oh, that's okay. I think it arrived quicker than we expected to. It was very sweet of you, and I love it. Whenever I turn it on, I'm going, ooh, it's very fancy. It's got the RGB in it. It's my first desktop with fancy lights and all that cool stuff. So I'm very lucky. As for another home techie with your hands project, you've been really into modding iPods. Suddenly,
I mean, modding one
yeah,
iPod.
you modded a iPod, but you're into it generally.
Yeah.
When we were in Portland, this was so you did the first mod before we went up, and I was like, I'm pretty sure my mom's got to have some iPods lying around, so I went on a hunt and we scrounged out a couple from her collection to look at. But I think you were kind of inspired by wanting to get away from all these streaming services, and
Yes.
everybody's really into like older tech right now, and granted, iPod's not that old, but you can take it with you and just have the music on it. It's your music, and you don't have to deal with any of this other stuff. But you had one that was working, and then one that wasn't working that happened to be this model that's pretty easy to mod.
Yeah, I think so. It's not like the preferred favorite one, but it's still relatively simple.
Right.
Maybe third gen or something. Anyway, yeah, I had this one iPod that doesn't work. Or you could turn it on, but then it would give you like this sad iPod image or something. And also, you would hear the hard drive try to turn on. It would like spin up and then stop, spin up and stop, spin up and stop. So there's like something wrong with the hard drive. And I was like, well, I don't know how to fix that. I don't know if it is fixable. And then I looked up, I don't know why I looked up iPod modding. We've seen videos on it before. It's not like I'd never heard of it. But I don't know. I decided to look into it more seriously. It was like, okay, for this model of iPod, you can buy an SD card reader and stick that in place of the hard drive. And then you can use it again. So I was like, okay, I'll try it. And so I did. I bought an SD card reader thing online. And then when it came, you know, opened up the iPod, took out the old hard drive, put in the SD card reader with a fresh SD card, and it worked. I also installed like a custom operating system called Rockbox on it because I'd always been curious about it. I think it has some bonuses compared to the regular iPod operating system where you can read more file formats, and it can also manage larger hard drives. So there are some perks. It doesn't look like quite as like nice or streamlined and simple as the actual iPod operating system, but it's fine. So I did that and it was fine. And so I'm happy and I want to do more. Unfortunately, the iPods we got from your mom are not moddable.
No, at least they work though.
Yeah, they work.
Yeah, but they're the, you know, newer ones, smaller form factor that don't seem like they can be modded. Oh well. And then you've also been playing around with your server. So it's time for another server segment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep, it's true. So I recently started using this new self-hosted tool called Booklore. And Booklore is a thing that manages ebooks, basically. And I already had a tool that did that, Calibre. For many years, I've been using that. And it's been fine. But Booklore looks cool. It's very pretty. And I've been ignoring it because I'm like, I don't care if it's pretty. I don't care. I have something that works. But then I found out that this new tool can track your reading and give you stats on your reading.
And graphs.
Mm-hmm. And I charts. Love stats.
Yeah, you do.
So
you
love a stat. I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a try. And so I have it. And it synced up to my Kobo so that the books automatically download onto it. I already was doing that with Calibre, but in addition, now when I read a book and finish it on the Kobo, it syncs up to the server to say the book's done, and then it gets marked as read. It goes into the read shelf, and then I have, you know, information that I finished the book. Unfortunately, it doesn't have all of the stats that the software seems to offer. There's like many more stats, like what time you read and how long your reading sessions are, and those don't appear to sync. I think I might need to use the app KO Reader, Co-Reader, I don't know, to get those enhanced stats in. So I have to look at how to install that on the Kobo. But I might try just to see. But so far I like it. One thing that I haven't got working yet on it, though, is in theory, when you finish a book on your ebook reader and then it syncs to the server, it can also supposedly update your hardcover profile. Hardcover.app is a site that you can track the books you've read on. It's similar, you know, it's like Goodreads or whatever, except not owned by Amazon. So I prefer it. But then I always like never update it because I'm like, that's an extra step. After I read the book, I gotta go on the website and mark it as read. So this would make it more automated, but it hasn't worked yet. So I don't know what I'm missing or something. But that'll be an extra bonus once I do figure that part out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Love those stats.
Mm-hmm.
Love some automation too.
Yes.
Streamlining.
Yes.
All good stuff. I'm not using any of this aside from Calibre.
Right now you're still using Calibre on your books. Yes.
Books.
Mm-hmm.
Because didn't you say Booklore isn't playing nice with it?
For some reason, yeah. I wasn't able to get it to sync and I don't know why.
That's okay.
But it's fine.
I'll use the ugly one with no stats. I read books much slower than you though. We'll talk a lot about books in an upcoming segment, but for now, I have been pottering as well. I've been focusing on a new project. I think, you know, for the past year or two, I've been kind of wistfully saying it wouldn't be fun if I did markets and had a stall. and sold some of my crafts and things that we find that we want to, you know, thrift but aren't really interested in keeping for ourselves. And I did do a market once. So I did a small one, I think 2 years ago, it will be 2 years ago in February. And it was just a little thing to try out. And at the time, I was really into decoupage. So I just tried to sell a bunch of decoupage coasters, where you use like upcycled papers and things to make little coasters. And I think just the event wasn't really the right event. And there wasn't a ton of traffic. So I didn't really get much traction there. But it kind of stuck that little itch in me to do more stuff like that. So I decided 2026 was the year that I would be more serious about it, check out which types of markets might be good for me, and then make some, you know, streamlined products that I could sell. And I got that together. And just this week, I launched the Instagram account for the store, which will be a market store. And eventually, I'd like to do an online store, too, for folks that can't come to the local markets. But it's called Apricot Sushi Shop. And I had a whole lot of fun making the logo. That was really fun in particular. And you helped me a lot with that, Marcus, with some ideas. I really wanted to channel like 80s and 90s aesthetic in it. And, you know, a lot of people use Canva for logos, which is like totally fine. But you can kind of see when they look sort of samey. Mm-hmm. So I did start playing around with Canva to get some ideas, but then I was like, this can't quite do what I want to do. So I took it off Canva and played around with some different fonts, and then actually learned a few things in Affinity. I think I'm using Affinity Photo for this one because I'm more familiar with like Photoshop. So Affinity Photo is kind of the equivalent of that. And to clarify, Affinity was bought by Canva, and Canva just launched, I think it was last month, the free all-new version of Affinity. So you can download it for your PC now. It's just called Affinity, and you get what used to be their separate photo vector and publishing. Yeah, that's right. Apps all together in one. So it's just Affinity. So if you're at all interested, I definitely recommend checking that out. I've played with that a little bit, but haven't gotten super used to it yet. So I was using the old version, which we bought outright when I kind of wanted to move away from all the Adobe stuff. So anyway, I was using Affinity Photo, and I learned some tricks to like do different techniques with the text and things. I think it turned out really good. So yeah, I was really happy. Oh, thank you. Yeah, you gave me some great ideas, like how to change up the font, because I was like, it's giving too much like late 90s Y2K vibes. I really want to channel more of the, you know, late 80s, early 90s aesthetic that I particularly like. And so you gave me a suggestion to change the font of the shop. And anyway, I'll link to the Instagram if you want to check it out. But in addition to the logo, I've been making products to sell at my first market, which will be in February. This is really like a trial run. I didn't want to do one that would be like too busy, because there are some local markets that I think would be a really good fit for me, but they almost seem like they'd be too overwhelming to do right away. Like I'd have to hit the ground running and like have a really nice shop set up and have a lot of really good products and just be like, you know, really know what I'm doing. But this one is much smaller. It's a lot cheaper to vend at. And I think I can like kind of give it a shot and like get an idea for like what I have already and what I might need to get, or, you know, what's not working right before I do a fancier market. But I have a bunch of junk journals I'm working on and other scrappy things like ephemera packs, and also collecting some merch to sell, like got a couple of vintage jackets and things. So anyway, that's been a lot of fun. And you can check out what I'm doing on Instagram. And I will be opening the online shop after the first market at the end of February. So whatever I don't sell there, I'll post online too. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. And with that, we'll go into news. We just got a little bit of news today. First of all, there was a Tomodachi Life live stream today. And while I don't think either of us are super crazy big on Tomodachi Life, they had some cool news.
I like Tomodachi Life.
Okay, you're crazy big on it, but you didn't watch the...
I forgot. I forgot that it was happening. when they announced it, I'm like, oh, I want to watch that. I did think that. And then this morning you were like, oh, it was on. I'm like, oh,
Oh,
I
well, we can
forgot.
always go back and watch
Yeah,
it.
I know.
But what's the big news?
The big news is that they added a new feature both for when you're creating your Tomodachi characters. You get to define their gender, and you can select for the new game, you can do female, male, or non-binary, as well as for when you're selecting, you can select the preference for dating. So who your Tomodachi could date or who they're interested in dating, same options, same three options. So I think that's very cool that Nintendo has pushed forward with that. It wasn't in the previous games. And so that's just a nice thing to do. Probably if we get this game, every character I make will just be non-binary and interested in
And
non-binary.
interested in everyone. Well, for the dating, it's not that you have to tick just one. You can tick all of them so they can like
So
everyone.
yeah,
But
that's what
I
I'm
guess if everybody's non-binary, then you just need to tick non-binary because there won't be anyone else.
But I think it's cool. I like it. It's just nice to have more options. And, it just reflects more of the world.
Yeah, it seems like surprisingly forward thinking of Nintendo. I was reading an article about it before we recorded this because I couldn't remember if you could have like gay relationships in the past Tomodachi Life. Apparently, you couldn't. And then Nintendo kind of apologized and said that if they make another game, they will be more cognizant of like the current world and make something that's appropriate for everyone, something like that. But I could see them offering like homosexual relationships, but to add non-binary as a gender option as well, and to have non-binary in like a dating preference, I think is interesting. Especially for a Japanese company, right?
And I was just thinking about when I played it on 3DS, I think why I thought there could be gay relationships is I think what I did, because I put myself in it, and then I think all the guys that I put in it were coded in the game as female.
Oh, does it really matter though?
It
Like,
doesn't really matter, but I think I did that so that to me it was giving the appearance of gay
Because they
relationships.
can look however you want them to
Yes,
look, right?
yes.
Well, that's fun. Yeah, so Tomodachi Life Within the Dream, I believe it's coming out in a couple months. We haven't watched the stream, so we can't really comment on any other aspects, but I did see you can make. Not only can you make non-binary characters, but you can also make non-human characters now. If you want to have an
Like an
alien,
animal?
yeah,
Okay.
I guess a teddy bear and an alien are two options I saw. So you can have a maybe a non-binary alien, which is
Okay.
very exciting.
I like that.
Then we have some Silent Hill F news, kind of. This really shocked me. A lot of shocking Japanese news this episode. But Silent Hill F and Fatal Frame 2, the Crimson Butterfly remake, are doing free collaboration DLC where each game will get downloadable costumes from the other game. So Fatal Frame 2's girls will be able to get a costume for free where they have like an outfit like the character from Silent Hill F. And I assume vice versa, but they've only revealed the Fatal Frame 2 half of it so far. But that's like, that's wild to me. You've got Koei Tecmo, who owns Fatal Frame 2, and Konami, who owns Silent Hill. And they're like, yeah, we're direct competitors with our horror games, but we're gonna do a collab. So good on them, I guess. That's fun. Then, I guess that's all of the news we've got for today. Not a lot of news, which is fine. We'll roll right into our what we've been playing, watching, and reading. So, first of all, Marcus, you picked up a game.
Yeah, I did. Well, I think we already had it.
Yeah, I mean, you picked it up to play it.
Yes,
You held it in your hands.
the game in question is Dead Rising Remastered, for PS5 in this case. Back in the day, Dead Rising was one of the reasons why I wanted to have an Xbox 360.
Oh.
During, like, I don't know, an E3 trailer or something, when they first revealed Dead Rising, I was like, oh my god.
It was 360 exclusive?
I think so, yeah.
Oh. Why were you like, oh my god?
Because it looked like a game that I've always wanted, basically.
Oh.
In the sense that, from what they showed, it was like, for one, it's very much to my liking of zombies in a mall, which itself I think is referencing one of the, I don't remember which one of those of the Dead movies. One of them takes place in a mall.
Like Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, one of those. Anyway, but then in addition, it's just a ton of zombies. So many zombies on screen, all over the place. And I like that. I love hordes of zombies in video games.
Okay.
I feel like there's never enough zombies.
I didn't
know. At least at the time, that's how I felt.
I didn't know this about you, but okay.
Yes, at the time, it was like there's not enough zombies. Mm-hmm. Also, I don't want them to be like super difficult per se. Mm-hmm. I just want tons of zombies. Mm-hmm. Like, so in Resident Evil, there's never a bazillion zombies on screen at one time. Mm-hmm. There's only like one or two. And granted, they're kind of tough to fight, so it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Aside from the fact that the system could not handle that many enemies. Mm-hmm. But I always wanted the game where you just have tons of zombies that you can mow down. And it's like, there's a part in Resident Evil 4 where you're holed up in a house and you have to fight off the zombies that are coming into the house. And I'm like, this is good. This is getting there. And so I like put a save point right there so I could always replay this segment over and over again. And so Dead Rising was like, yes. Also Left 4 Dead. But I don't remember which one came first. Either way, Dead Rising, very exciting to me. I guess Dead Rising was first. So I got it and loved it on the 360. Never actually beat it, though. I would just roam around and attack zombies forever. And die a lot. So I have very fond memories of it. And I don't remember why exactly I decided to play it, but I did. We're playing it with the Japanese voice acting. So that's fun. I never actually have heard Dead Rising in Japanese before, so that's cool. And maybe better, because I think in English they replaced Frank West's voice actor for this one. So I don't hear that. I just get to hear everyone speaking in Japanese. And let's see. In addition, I'm pretty sure there's new outfits in this game, mm-hmm. Including being like almost naked. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of the game like that.
Yeah, and you get that in the cutscenes and everything, mm-hmm. just fully, you know, everything out. It's mm-hmm. got underwear on. You can have no shoes. And it makes a horrible, like, foot slapping, skin hitting the ground sound as you run around, and it's awful. But, yeah, that was unlocked from the beginning, so mm-hmm. I assume that must be something for the remastered version. You mm-hmm. get this free costume. The other thing of note is you mentioned that you don't think that they had difficulties in the original, but they have an easy mode now. Mm-hmm. So you're playing on easy.
Yes, and it is much easier, so I'm glad. There's still a little bit of challenge there. But it's not so bad. It's much easier to fight off the bad guys. So I'm glad. I like that. The game is still dumb, silly. Mm-hmm. I like it. It's just very simple, you know. Go to waypoints, save people, fight zombies, eat some food.
Yeah.
Rinse and repeat. And I like that.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. I like it. I didn't know the guy was a photographer, so that was mm-hmm. a fun thing to find out, that you can take photos of stuff.
Yep.
And they're like little side missions where people want you to like take their photos in front of the zombies, and that's really funny. And yeah, you know, kind of retro mall setting is pretty fun. I'm not sure like when it's supposed to take place, but it certainly isn't like 2010 or something. It's probably like 90s, right?
I don't know. I think it's meant to be like modern at the time that it was released.
Okay.
And you know, just the nature of malls, they kind of don't evolve.
Yeah, they just feel old. Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. They're stuck in time.
Yeah.
Well, I've enjoyed watching you play since I've never played it before.
Good.
Yeah. Then for movies, we've watched a bunch of horror. First of all, we watched the new Frankenstein film that came out in 2025 up in Portland with my mom. And I was very excited to watch this as I'd heard good things about it. And I would say overall, I thought it was good. I think it was a fun watch. There were some things that I thought were a bit odd, like changes in the Frankenstein story. Now, to be clear, I haven't actually read the whole original book before, but I've read and seen a lot of different adaptations. And I know, like, some of the plot points, like, I don't think that there's ever a girl in the original story that falls in love with Frankenstein or has feelings for him. I'm pretty sure that no girl ever meets Frankenstein. He just wants to have a, you know, a woman created like him. And so there were some things that I was like, But overall, I liked the atmosphere and it was just a fun watch. What did you think?
I thought it was fine. Long.
Yeah, it was long. Yeah, over 2 hours.
Not Del Toro's best.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe, you know, when you're doing something in alliance with Netflix, you kind of lose some of your edge.
That makes sense, yeah.
But whatever, I thought it was fine. I prefer other Frankenstein movies.
Yeah, good. Mm-hmm.
Like Flesh for Frankenstein.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, I mean, that isn't a direct adaptation at all, but no. that one was fun. Yes, I like that one better as all. Then we watched a couple more movies in the Vinegar Syndrome backlog. Mm-hmm. Firstly, The Black Room.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. We just watched
it. Yeah, we literally just watched it last night.
Okay, so this one... The Black Room from like 1982 or somewhere around there. And it's a movie about a married couple and the husband just wants to have sex with random women. And so he does this by renting out a fancy little place in the Hollywood Hills to take his random women, his quote, I guess, black room. And it is like a black room, like
yes,
literally,
yes.
With candles and wine and such, and takes them there. And then the thing is, there's more to the black room where the person he's renting it from is using him to take the people that he's bringing anyway, I don't know, to kill them, basically.
Yeah,
but the husband is allowed to survive because he's bringing, you know, new victims to this room. And he's unaware of what is happening. So, odd concept, but relatively fun watch.
Yes, and you didn't include the fact that the house is actually owned by a brother and sister. So it's more of a brother and sister operation, and they're both kind of weird. And maybe weirdly into each other, like codependent, and maybe some tension there. And yeah, I think we've got like a growing collection of weird brother-sister movies now. Because there's the other one, the
Party Line.
Party Line, yeah. It had a very similar dynamic between the brother and sister who were also
murderers.
Serial killers. Yeah, murderers. So similar concept there. One thing I liked about this, and I'm going to be spoiling the film The Black Room a little bit, just warning everyone, but the wife does find out that the husband is going to the black room, and one of the aspects of this whole thing, aside from the siblings killing the people he brings in, the brother likes to watch through a one-way mirror viewing thing, and he takes photos, and he's like into that aspect of it, so he like lets her, the wife, watch, and she gets like really upset. But then she decides to bring some men there herself, and then her husband finds out and he's really mad about it. And I was like, oh, this is so rich. Like, oh, of course you're mad about it. It's like you didn't think about how she feel about it. And just like that whole interaction, like they have like a fight and a confrontation about it. And I just thought it was really, like, fun how they did it. She's like, well, I'm having fun. If you've got a problem with that, then, like, screw off. You know, like, yeah. She, I think he gives her an ultimatum. He's like, it's either you stop going or I'm leaving you. And she's mm-hmm. like, okay, go ahead then. You know, yeah. like you're so hypocritical, you know. And I feel like you don't really see that kind of thing a lot even now mm-hmm. in movies. So that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, the plot point of the philandering husband is everywhere.
Sure.
But usually it's just like the woman is wrecked about it. It's not that she's like, well, I'm going to try it too.
Yeah.
And I'm going to find that it is worthwhile or whatever.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that was fun. Yes. And then we watched two movies with claymation in them and also similar names. So the first one's called Frostbiter, The Wrath of the Wendigo, and the other is Winter Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these sort of had similar settings, too. They're, like, in the...
Lodge?
Lodges, middle of nowhere, kind of forested area where there's kind of a local legend, you know, of, you know, monsters and demons and that kind of thing. And so Frostbiter had... The Wendigo was, like, a centaur. And I saw a clip of it, on, like, going around online. I thought, that looks really fun. So mm-hmm. we watched that first, and I thought it was pretty fun, but it was, you know, a little disjointed, like clearly a very low budget film, like trying mm-hmm. to be, like, they're both trying to be like spoofs, right? Like kind of horror comedy a bit.
I think Frostbiter is more
spoofy, yeah, right.
50s movie thing
than Winter Beast.
Yeah,
Winter more Beast, I think, was trying to be more serious, right? Mm-hmm. It just didn't have the budget, maybe.
Yeah, Frostbiter didn't have awesome acting either, from what I remember.
Yeah, but it did have some funny songs and like chili monster.
Yeah, a monster that came out of chili.
Yeah, and they had a chili song.
Yes.
So that was pretty funny. But that one, I think Frostbiter was like disjointed in a way where I was like, a lot of times I was like, wait, why is this happening? You know, mm-hmm. Well, Winter Beast too a bit, but Frostbiter in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But still fun to see the claymation monsters and the different things that they're doing.
Yeah.
Winter Beast was really fun because you had like a human villain mm-hmm. aspect of it, whereas Frostbiter was like all the supernatural the stuff. And Winter Beast, there was a tinge of like Jaws to it,
yes.
Where it was like, you know, a summer getaway kind of in the mountains where people would come to vacation and go camping, and the guy that ran the lodge there didn't want to close it down even though all these people disappearing and deaths happening, because he didn't think there was anything wrong and it was like their busiest season. He didn't want to lose money or lose the bookings and all that. So that was like very much Jawsy. And Blades, is, you know, also a spin on Jaws. But towards the end, you find out that, you know, the man who runs the lodge, who's like very queer-coded, is all like, he's kind of orchestrating it. I guess it wasn't really clear. He at least knows about what's going on and why it's going on. And then he had some fun like song and kind of like dance scene where he was like, yeah, dancing around with some skeletons and things. And that actor looked like he was having so much fun. And that was like the highlight of the film. He was just like loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah, I thought he was actually a decent actor.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who he is. I could probably look it up and be like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah.
But the other actors, you know, not so great. So it's like, wow, why'd they get this man?
Yes. Yeah, you're right. I remember there were some scenes like with all the different guys that like, you know, worked for the forestry, you know, whatever. And they was just, I remember you pointed out to me, like, look, that guy keeps fiddling with something on the table. Mm-hmm. Like, they really couldn't give him any direction about what to do. So he just, it seems like the actor doesn't know what to do with himself while he's talking. Or, like, scenes where, like, they didn't want to retake it, but they clearly didn't do a good job. Mm-hmm. Or I think this was the one where I saw the boom mic in the corner, too.
Or the guy was coughing.
Yeah, the guy coughs during some dialogue, and they're like, man, we'll just keep it in there. But it clearly doesn't seem like it was on purpose part of the conversation that this mm-hmm. man has a cold or something, you know? But yes, he was the standout. The villain was a pretty good actor. And he did a really good job with those scenes.
Yeah.
So worth it for that. And lots of good claymation. This one had, I think, more monsters or more varied monsters. Like, there were big, there was like a big evil chicken. And there was almost like a dragon thing. And just lots of fun stuff going on.
Yeah, it's fun. It's in both movies, it's so funny to watch a claymation thing kill someone.
Yes, and then the person is also all claymation, right? Yeah, it's very funny. And then finally, we got a bunch of books. You want to tell us about all the books you're reading?
Yes, but oh, just a thing. I think most of these movies, except for Frankenstein, are available on Tubi for free.
Oh, yes, we love Tubi. That's great. And we liked all three of the Vinegar Syndrome films, The Black Room, Winter Beast, and Frostbiter, are keepers.
Yes, so we're keeping them.
We're keeping all of those. So it was a pretty good run. Okay, yes. now on to the books.
Yes, so at some point this month, I was looking around on Instagram, and I saw a library was doing a 50 book challenge. So read 50 books this year, and every 10 books you get a prize. And they're dumb prizes, but they're prizes and it's cute. And so I thought, I bet I could do that.
Yeah.
I bet I could read 50 books in a year. And so I decided to sign up and I started reading books. Well, I was already reading. I'm always reading anyway, but I am more determined right now.
Yeah, because when you think about it, 50 is a lot. Like, I think we looked at how many you read last year, just kind of doing your own thing, and you maybe read 20, 25?
Yeah, something like 20.
Yeah.
Because normally I'm reading a book when I have the urge or desire to, so maybe a new book comes out, and I'm like, oh, I want to read that. Or you're reading something, and you're not liking it, and I'm like, okay, I'll read it. So I think more directed or more intentional, I could read more than that. So far, I've read a couple of books. I read Looking for Mr. Goodbar, which it's about a, it's like basically the story of this woman's life from youth to adulthood and her fraught relationship with sexuality or sex, I guess. Anyway, I don't know. I didn't really like it. That's what I have to say about that.
Okay.
I read Box Hill, which is the book that the upcoming movie Pillion is based on. And when I saw the trailer for that movie, because you showed it to me, I was like, okay, looks good. I want to see that movie. And so I was like, well, I bet I should read the book because I bet it would be good too. But I don't know. I don't know if the movie's going to be way different or if the movie trailer is just trying to amp up all the fun, sexy, gay times. But I'm like, this, the book, you really don't see a lot of it. And the, and I'm like, I don't know. Anyway, for people who don't like sad gay narratives, maybe watch out unless they change the book for the movie.
That's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
It has Alexander Skarsgård in the movie.
I know.
I was very excited. And then you told me more spoiler stuff because I don't really mind. And yeah, we'll still watch the movie, but we'll see.
Hopefully, what they do a lot. I hope they dig in deeper to the period of their relationship. Because that's where all the interest is, I think. I don't really want to know what happens later, you know. Anyway, so that was that. And then I read Sick and Dirty, which is a nonfiction kind of film critique or film essays book. Mostly about movies that came out in the Hays Code era of Hollywood, which is when American movies were under these series of rules and regulations where they could not show certain things on film, including anything to do with homosexuality. So the author's bent is that a lot of the movies in that era, people don't like today or dismiss because they are shitty to the queer-coded characters, or the queer-codedness is not good, or a bad depiction of a negative character or a negative situation, or, you know, tragic deaths and all that stuff that's so famous around a lot of LGBTQ media. And basically he's trying to say, you know, these films are still worth looking at and watching, and they're still effective and interesting, even if maybe they were the spawn of a trope that everyone hates. You know, it's still worth, the film is still worthwhile regardless of that, and that type of thing. So trying to kind of like reclaim these movies. And so I thought that was cool. The title of the book, as well as the picture on the cover of the book, is from the Children's Hour, the 60s version. And I'm like, I want to rewatch that movie, but then I'm like, it's sad, so I haven't rewatched it yet. But it made me want to. Then I read Careless People, which is, I guess, a memoir from someone who worked at Facebook for a while. And they talk about, you know, because they were high up, they talk about weird stuff with the high up people like Mark Zuckerberg and, you know, all of those folks. And to me, I thought it would be very interesting because I would like to see a peek behind the curtain about these people and what, you know, they're like and what they are thinking or not thinking when they're running these massive companies like Facebook, and what do they feel about the harms that Facebook does to people and stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't know. The way the author wrote it came across kind of weird, and in a way that I felt like, I'm not sure that I believe everything you're saying. Not because it was so outlandish or anything, but just the way that it was written. I'm like, a little odd. Like, oh, I'm at this random club in a random country, not popular, and oh, Hillary Clinton's just there dancing. Maybe she was, but it's like, why do I need to know? This has nothing to do with the plot. You don't interact with Hillary Clinton. Just like weird stuff. Anyway, so I didn't really like that. I read Axiom's End, which is a sci-fi book about a young woman who comes face to face with an alien and befriends it. I didn't really care for it either. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, for someone who wants to read a lot, I don't like a lot of books, apparently.
Oh, we know this about you. It's okay. You just find, it's hard for you to find fiction that you like. You
yeah, know? I'm good with nonfiction, but fiction is just a really tough thing for me. And then I started reading Love at Second Sight. I'm reading that right now. That's a young adult paranormal mystery and romance story. That one's not bad.
Oh, there you go. See, we were saying after Axiom's End, I was like, well, maybe you really should try some young adult fiction. Because I feel like probably most of what I read is young adult.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm easier on books than you are. But, oh, you know, I've enjoyed a lot of it. And I don't know this one that you're reading, but maybe you'll find more success with young adult fiction. So
maybe. We'll see. I also queued up to read, but I haven't started yet, the first book in the Heated Rivalry series.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. You're gonna get your finger on the pulse of what's hot right now, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious. I don't know.
Yeah. Could and then fun. We can watch it.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah, I'm moving along at a clip where if I keep this pace, I should be able to read 50 books by the end of the year.
Sure.
Especially if I read more romance.
Yeah,
because that's quick. A lot shorter than most of the other things I read.
Yeah, true.
So we'll see. It's fun to read, even if I don't love all the books. I just hope to find more that I do enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you think about it, probably you have a similar win rate for books as you do films, right? Like, obviously, we watch a lot of films and you don't love all of them, too. In fact, there are a lot we don't really care for, so just like books take longer to read.
Yeah, like 4 to 10 hours versus Two hours.
2 hours max, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, maybe that's not true. Maybe you like more films. But whenever I ask you, like, what'd you think of a film, you're kind of like, oh, it was okay. Which I guess is better than you being like, eh, which yes, is what you is. Say about the books a lot. Okay, fine. Yeah, when I always check in with Marcus, you know, how's this book going? And a lot of times it's like,
Yeah.
But it's fun to hear about.
Good.
And with that, we've come to the end of episode 120 of Pixel Pixel. Thanks so much for listening, and we shall see you all again in 2 weeks.